Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Where are you?
I am currently in Lancashire in my friend's kitchen, because obviously, as you know, yesterday I had a little bit of problems. So he's been kind enough to borrow me his laptop and his mic as well. So that's what I'm doing at the moment.
And who are you?
I am Sinéad Reid.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sinéad, you're at a friend's house right now, but let's just imagine you are back at home and you still live in Crewe in Cheshire, right?
No, I don't actually live there anymore. I moved out of there at 16, so I live in a place called Poynton in Cheshire.
Ah, so not, just up the road, not too far then from Crewe. But if we were able to ride together like I normally do in normal times with guests on home roads, where would you take me?
I think like in Cheshire, there's some beautiful roads. And I think I kind of head out to like Mobley and Knutsford, then to Tatton Park and do like a loop. There's like a 3 hour loop that I usually do. But there's so many beautiful spots. There's Brickworks that is just like a stone throw from my house. I'm not into hills, so I only go there occasionally if I have to. I'm kind of into like the flat sort of roads. But yeah, there's so many different riding spots where I live.
Flat roads, because of course, you know, you're all about speed and power. That's a given.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously us sprinters get the rap of being a little bit lazy when it comes to hills.
Have you always ridden on the road, or has that just come later, or was that always part of the training for BMX and track?
It's always been kind of implemented in the training that I did from joining British Cycling, really. Prior to that, I never did any road. It's all about kind of just doing like BMX drills and BMX sprints and gym. And then obviously as we got more educated within British Cycling and the sports scientists were looking into things, the component of the training then became on the road.
Do you enjoy it?
When the weather's like this, there's no better thing to be doing than riding your bike. When it's cold and wet and rainy in the winter where you know, in Manchester, not so much, but it was part and parcel of what I did. So anything, you know, that I didn't particularly like in training, I just got on with it because I knew it was only going to get me, you know, faster for when I needed to be.
And then the other question about riding at the moment is, do you get back on the BMX? Do you get back on the track even at the moment?
You know, it's funny, like I haven't been on a BMX for maybe a couple of years. And actually, while I've been at my friend's house today, that's where I've been. I've been at the BMX track riding. I just thought, oh, it'd be good to kind of get back on and just have a little bit of fun on the bike. And that's what I've been doing for the last few hours.
How'd it feel?
Do you know, it was weird because I was saying to my friend Sam, like, when I don't put my helmet on and I just look at a BMX track, I'm on the sideline, I just think these lot are crazy. But when I put my helmet on and then get on the BMX, it's like my alter ego. And then I'm just like switched straight back into BMX mode and just love it. Like I'm back enjoying it and I feel good on my bike. But yeah, I can do it at my pace and, you know, I don't have to chase any numbers down or anything like that. So yeah, no, it's weird. Like I haven't been on for a good few years, but still feel like it's not been that long since I left it.
Like nothing to prove, of course, anymore. But do the competitive juices start? Do they start flowing?
Yeah, I think they do. But I have to, you know, really remind myself that this, you know, the risk versus reward sort of thing. And yeah, my mind and my body are kind of like fighting each other. And I'm a bit like, so because so many people say, oh, why don't you make a comeback? You know, you could beat most of the girls that's out there. And I'm just like, for me, I feel like I got my full fulfillment through the sport of BMX and track cycling. And it just wouldn't add any value to my life now. So I just always have to remind myself that, you know, it was something that I did for 20 years. And now I'm in, you know, the next chapter of my life.
Well, we'll come back to the next chapter, but I'd like to go back to the start of the whole bicycling experience, because you did grow up in Crewe. You grew up just with your mum, I think I'm right in saying. And then, so when did BMX start to be a part of your life?
Yeah, I grew up, my mum had me, well, she was pregnant at 16 and had me at 17. And I lived with her for a few years, kind of on and off, and then like kind of fully moved in with my nan and granddad, who kind of took over a little bit. And who's been like the biggest supporters of mine, and my granddad's like my role model. And then I started BMX when I was 10, and that was, yeah, I never knew what BMX even was when I was at that age. But my uncle's two kids did it, and he would always come round and, you know, catch up with my granddad. And I'd just be always like my ears would prick up when he was like talking about the stories, like, we've been here this weekend and we're going there, and, you know, the barbecue was going, had a great time. And I'd always be just like intrigued as to, you know, what the sport was. And he said, oh, like the club now has got some bikes, like hire bikes, where you can hire them out for £1. Why don't you give it a go? And then literally, as soon as I went, I absolutely loved it.
Just fell in love with it, just knew this was the thing you wanted to do. Did you know it would be even a career at that point, or was it just something you wanted to have fun doing?
Well, I didn't know it was going to be a career, because obviously BMX wasn't in the Olympics. It was only introduced in 2006 or 2007 that it was going to be an Olympic discipline. And then obviously in 2008 was the Olympics. But for me, it's really strange. Like, I always knew from the very, like, the first few months when I got into it, that's what I was going to do. Like, it didn't matter if it paid the bills. It didn't matter if I was, you know, like, it just, I had no barriers there. I just loved this sport. And I'd be in school in the classroom, like, drawing little BMX tracks. And, like, it was just, like, it took over my life. Like, I absolutely loved it. Any spare minute I got, I was at the track. Summer holidays, I was there from the morning through till, you know, till it got dark. And it just, like, I just loved it. And I was like, I don't know how, I don't know, you know, what it looks like, but I am going to make this my career. And then luckily, as it unfolded, it became my career.
I really want to talk about representation right now, right at the start in BMX, in cycling in general, actually, because you're mixed race. Your mum is from an Irish family. Your dad, who I know you haven't spent much time with over the years, from the Caribbean, am I right in saying?
Yeah, from Jamaica, yeah.
Yeah, so were you the only brown face doing BMX at the time? Were there anyone else to look up to that looked like you, or did you feel, what did it feel like at the time?
Well, the only thing that felt different when I first started BMX was that I was at my BMX track in Crewe, was I was the only female. Like, that was the only difference, because the guy that run the club, and the reason why I loved it as well and he made it enjoyable, was a guy called, he'd labelled himself this, I'm not labelling him, Black Bob. And he was a Jamaican guy, and he was just like full of energy. He was, you know, like enthusiastic. He didn't know anything scientifically, but he would just put training drills together. And people like Jamie Staff, and who raced BMX then, and all these like greats of the sport, would travel from all across the country to come and train at Crewe BMX track, because Bob was infectious, and everyone used to say he produces champions. So in that respect, you know, the coach was black and everybody else was white, and I was, you know, mixed race. And yeah, I never had any barriers or felt different in any way, because, you know, our figurehead was a black man.
Because there's another BMXer that I've talked to about this and hoping to talk to on Home Roads, called Charlie Reynolds. And when I was a kid in the 80s, the big BMXer was a guy called Andy Ruffell, who I looked up to. He had a team rally bike. It was the coolest looking BMX you'd ever seen. And Charlie was just as skillful, but never got the exposure that Andy had had. There was clearly a difference then. Do you think Black Bob, as you mentioned there, and you coming through the sport, helped to change it?
Do you know something? I never can even like considered, you know, being of a different colour, because I think for me, I was brought up in a white household. Like, so it was almost like I felt like I was white. That sounds silly, but it was only when I look at the colour of my skin, I'm like, okay, I'm different. But in my house, everyone was white. So, you know, my mum had other children and they were white. And so I had my brothers and sister was white. So I always never really thought about my colour of my skin. And I think, like, I've always been extremely lucky, and I'm super, super grateful that I never had, you know, any missed opportunities, or, you know, like, even when I kind of, the sport got more mainstream, I always had really good media attention around me, worked on some amazing projects, and I never had any, you know, I've done a few interviews recently, but I've never had any barriers put in my way because of my race. It's just been, I'm Sinead Reid, the BMXer, and yeah, that's how it's been for me.
It's good to hear that your out and out talent for it is what won through. I mean, and that's how it should be, frankly, isn't it? When did that start to become apparent? When did you start to realise that actually I'm pretty good at this? This is something I could compete at.
I think in the second, I started in 1999, and then in 2000, because in BMX it was age categories, so you could race like the 11 girls, the 12 girls, and until you get to junior. And I went to the European Championships as 11 and raced the 11 girls, and I've got European champion, and I've been on my bike for, I mean, so it would have been around just under a year, and I've become European champion, and no other rider from Great Britain had won the European Championships, not on that day, and there was the first female for many, many years. And I remember, like, oh yeah, that's cool, that's okay. And I got back in the stands, in the grandstands, and like the whole of like the, you know, the people watching, all the fans, like they were chucking me up and down and was like, oh, like this is incredible. Like people were crying, like it's amazing for UK BMX. And I was just like, oh wow, I'm, you know, I've just only run a bike race. And I think slowly from there, you know, I won the World Championships a few years later when I could afford to go. And yeah, I guess when I first won, even because it was amateur World Championships, I guess I was thinking, yeah, I'm pretty good at this. And as soon as I won that, I was like, I want to be the very best that's ever lived as a female to race a BMX bike.
And you went on the BMX to be a 5 times world champion. When you reflect on that achievement, and we're not even talking about track yet, because obviously you've had achievements there as well. But when you reflect on being a 5 times world champion in BMX, you must feel incredibly proud. Or do you have to pinch yourself and think that was someone else? I can't believe I did that.
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of both, really, because I've been away from the sport for a little while now and gone through my mental health issues and other things. And, you know, it was weird. Like every time I won, I never, like, this is why I try and live in so much in the moment and be present in the day, because all the competitions and the world championships and everything that I won, I was just like, right, okay, now on to the next one. And it was almost like I didn't, like, you know, I didn't appreciate what I'd had just achieved, because I felt like, you know, well, my granddad was great. Like, my granddad's a great guy, but he'd always say, there's always someone better than you out there. So it kept me firmly on the ground, but I never then appreciated what I'd achieved. And then when I retired, I was just like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, that's the old me. That's what I used to do. And, you know, I can't live off that forever. So I kind of just dismissed it. Like, if you go into my house, there's no like medals up, there's no world champs jerseys. And it's in this kind of the last, okay, I guess in lockdown, I've been kind of thinking, you know what, like what I did achieve in the sport and the amazing stories I get from parents that got into the sport because of me, maybe I should be a little bit more proud of what I did achieve. So yeah, it's something I'm going through at the moment, actually.
You sound exactly like Sir Bradley Wiggins saying that. He said those words to me before. He never enjoyed it when he was winning those Olympic medals that he got. Yeah. He doesn't even bother with the medals now. He just sees them as objects, and they don't reflect how he really feels about himself these days. And he couldn't enjoy it at the time. You know, a couple of times he got silver when he should have got gold, and that was the biggest disappointment. When you think, actually, you still got a medal that someone else didn't get.
Yeah.
Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, because I've won 2 silver medals, and one was when me and Victoria, so we won in 2007 and 2008. And in 2009, we got silver at the World Championships in the team sprint. The Australians beat us. And then I got a silver at the time trial BMX World Championship when it was a silver, when it was a UCI event. I won the first year it got introduced in 2011. And then 2012, I got silver. And I've had my mum had all my medals framed, put into like a frame. And I said, whatever you do, do not add them silver medals. Like, they're just shoved under my nan's bed. Like, I just don't even acknowledge them, because I'm like, that was a failure. Like, that was the first loser. And that's how I used to, you know, see things. Whereas actually, like you said, if you take a step back, I'm like, wow, you got a silver medal at the World Championships. That's great. But I didn't see it like that.
Was that drilled into you? Was that the sort of the cycling setup that you were in? Because that's true of what Brad says.
You know, I think British cycling is, you know, it becomes such a big kind of entity, and you know, everyone was kind of in every discipline was doing really, really well, winning medal after medal, and it just become like the norm to win a UCI jersey, like to be the world champion. That was just the norm. So therefore, if you felt that was the norm, how do you then feel excited, or you know, all the things you should feel because everybody else was doing it, and everyone would pat you on the back, oh yeah, well done. And but it was just another gold medal. So I think like the environment in itself, like I think it was amazing, and it was a pleasure to have been a part of it and proud to have been a part of it. But at the same time, it was kind of, you know, it was just what it was. It was kind of a stressful environment at times because you just felt like, you know, like to be successful was to win.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
But also, Sinead, at the time, you know, you were at the kind of peak of your powers around the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, 2012 as well. And obviously, it didn't come off. You were pushing it to the limits and didn't get the gold that you deserved at either of those and didn't walk away with a medal. That happens. I mean, that just happens, especially if you're pushing it right to the limits. What I do want to talk about, though, is some of the people who would take a pop at you. You know, some of the people who accuse you of being a bit of a rock star, like Jamie Staff at the time saying you were living in La La Land, that sort of thing. That must have hurt.
Yeah, you know something that was, it really, really hurt me because I seen Jamie, like the very reason I got into track cycling by accident, why I raced the World Championships, and we can talk about that, was because Jamie went from BMX to track. And I used to always look up to him, like I was always compared to him, like the powerhouse of BMX. And then obviously I went onto the track and ended up being successful on there. And then out of nowhere, like he hadn't come to me and said that them things, or that he was going to write, you know, say them things about me in the press. And I look back and I was just a kid, like I was 18 in Beijing Olympics, like and 19 that year, but I was just a kid. And I just felt like, you know, if he had some respect or a little bit more respect for me, and, you know, like he said he did, I just felt like it was really hurtful. And I guess, you know, like he's apologized now and we chat and, you know, we get on, but it did hurt at the time. But I just guess I was a little vulnerable girl, really, in this big entity of British cycling that just loved riding the BMX bike. And it happened to go into the Olympics and I happened to, you know, not win the biggest race of my life. And then bang, like, it was just a lot to take on. And I think within them few years, I had success still. But I think that's when things started to fall apart, really.
We'll come on to that because you did mention before racing on the track with Vicky, Victoria Pendleton, of course, one of our greatest track cyclists ever. It's you make it sound so easy. Of course, I was a powerhouse on a BMX and I just switched to track. that's pretty hard work. There's a I've raced on the track. There's real discipline to holding your position, to dealing with the G forces going around the cornering, and also, of course, to not stop pedaling because it's fixed. Yeah. That you make that transition sound so easy, but I'm sure it wasn't.
It was easy, you know, because this is the thing. People underestimate, not everyone, but people underestimate how hard BMX is and the skill set and the training that goes in. You know, some people tell us just people, adults on kids' bikes or whatever. But then actually when they're in the gym, when people start seeing us in the gym and how strong we were, way stronger than the track riders, we were putting way more power out on the watt bikes than any of the track riders. And then for me, I have to go back to my grandmother again, but he was like, a bike's a bike. And that was my mentality. So when I told him, oh, I think I'm going to go to the world champ, she was like, oh, cool, that's, you know, a bike's a bike. You just got to pedal it fast. And I was like, yeah. So I just kept everything simple. Like, I didn't overanalyze things. I asked what I needed to do and broke down the start and executed what I needed to do. And I was just like, okay, yeah, that's way easier than BMX. I don't have to worry about 40-foot jumps. You know, I'm only held on the gate by, you know, like some little brake pads. I'm not balancing on an 8-meter ramp, high start ramp. And all I've just got to do is open the gas up and just go. And for me, that was just like simple. So, yeah, it sounds like, oh, yeah, it could have been hard, but it was just riding the bike around a circled track, basically.
But I think it's like even like road cyclists who try and do it on the track. And in the past few years, around the hour record, a few road time trialists thought, oh, I'll have a go at that. And they're not useless, but they can't get the skill required to stay on the black line, for example. They can't, the discipline of riding track, it takes a while, right?
Yeah, I had 6 weeks. Like from the moment I got onto the track to when I become crown world champion with Victoria, it was a 6-week process. And it was never about me coming onto the track to try and race. It was because Manchester was rainy, it was wet, we didn't have an indoor. And I was just like, I need to be able to get the best out of myself to go into this Olympics and be able to train without being affected by the weather. And it was, I think for me, like I just try and always simplify things, and I would look and analyze how people was, you know, doing a start. And then this is the thing with my personality, I've got an addictive personality. I would just break it down, look what I needed to do, and yeah, go out there and do it. And I guess if you go back to what you were saying about the road guys, you know, when they tried to do it on the track. But then if you look at some of them top road guys, like I know Sagan and I know, you know, Cavendish, they've all been from a BMX background. And again, it boils down to them skill sets that you need to be able to be an elite level BMX rider. They're transferable into other cycling disciplines.
When you were at the top of the tree, apart from people having a bit of a go because, well, who knows why they had a go, did you feel any prejudice then? And not just prejudice because of the colour of your skin, but maybe because of your gender, maybe because of your sexuality. Have you experienced prejudice on those terms?
No, I didn't, but I just never really felt like I fitted in. Like in terms of directly, not at all, but I never really felt, you know, I was the only person of colour at British Cycling to start with. So that was a, you know, like that you just look around you and you feel a little bit different. I didn't have the background of, you know, some of the upbringings of the other people that are from a council estate and stuff. So in that respect, I did feel very different and I didn't feel like I fitted in. And then obviously when, you know, a few people came out and said I'm a rock star, I felt like she seemed like she was a rock star and everything. It was just like, okay, you're not saying that about anybody else. And I just felt a little bit like, you know, why are they being like that with me when I feel like I'm an open person? You can come directly to me. But yeah, if that was the colour, I don't feel like it was to the colour of my skin, but I just didn't feel like I quite fitted in within that British cycling system.
Because, you know, obviously the conversation now, certainly stemming from the death of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, and every area of life, quite rightly, is being looked at. And I think it's probably safe to say that everybody carries a bit of prejudice with them, whoever they are, regardless of what they think. It's in the system. It's in the system we all live in. Are you sort of reflecting on that now? Are you looking back at your experience and thinking, actually, maybe that was racism, or maybe that was prejudice against who I am?
No, I can't. I can only ever be honest, and I don't feel like directly there was any racism like towards me, which is a great position to be in, because I know not a lot of people or other people, you know, who are mixed race or are black can say that within sport. But yeah, I think certainly with whatever everything that's going on and the energy and, you know, that's being put in directed to the Black Lives Matter is amazing. I think, you know, there's obviously it's political and some people are, you know, saying all lives matter. But for me, I think, you know, this is happening and people do need to stand up and be, you know, do more. People, everyone, even myself, like, that's not saying all white people should do more for black people, but I do feel like as well more black people could do more, you know. I think it's kind of a thing that it needs everyone to put, you know, more behind it. But I think for me, I feel like there's a lot of positivity around it, just people listening and waking up about it all.
Do you see the positive impact you've had? Do you see more kids of varying backgrounds coming into the sport that you love?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Like for me, if you look at the BMX program, 3 of the 5 riders are black or mixed race from Peckham. And they got into the sport because they see me in 2008 at the Olympics. So that in itself is, yeah, it makes me super proud to, you know, I've watched them grow from little kids and they're not so little now, they're, you know, the big guys now. But that in itself, like if you look on the track side, you can't really say there's many mixed race or black people there. It's very much middle class white people, whereas the BMX is, you know, more heavily weighted towards the mixed race people. And if I've helped be that role model and, you know, be that, you know, I can do this too, then fantastic.
And you have hung up your cycling shoes for the time being, certainly in terms of racing, but not without going out on a bit of a high. Finally, last year, you were crowned a British national champion in the team sprint. That's a pretty good way to go out.
Yeah, exactly. I think for me, like, I had retired from all competition and last year I got national champion, and that was something that I got asked if I would come back, and I went back into, and I said, yeah, okay, I'll come back, but I don't want to be funded. I just want to get the bike and the kit and I'm good. I said, because the reason why I am coming back, now you've asked me several times, I said, is because I know in my heart that the last two years probably of my career, that isn't how I wanted my representation to be left, or my, you know, my footprints to be left. I just didn't feel like I did myself justice. And I wanted to end my career on my terms, on how, you know, I wanted to be perceived by all the younger kids and stuff in the academy and actually look to me as a role model. So I came back purely because I wanted to end my career, my last chapter, exactly how I wanted to. And if that got us to the Olympics, amazing. It only got us to the nationals because some stuff got messed up basically with the coach. And yeah, I was meant to go to the World Championships, but yeah, it got messed up a little bit. So yeah, I was more than happy. And now I can look back and go, you know what? I did it my way. And that's just perfect for me.
And slightly fortunate for you as well that the Olympics got messed up for everybody anyway, because it's not happening now until next year. So maybe it was meant to be that way.
Yeah, definitely. I think things happen for a reason as well. And, you know, I may not have an Olympic medal of any colour to add to my collection, but for me, I did have, you know, some incredible memories. I went, you know, I did my very best, and that's all you can ever do in life is your best. And for me, I just, you know, I look at the Olympics and go, yeah, I couldn't, you know, couldn't get a medal, but I really enjoyed going to both Olympics.
I know we're not riding alongside each other on those Cheshire roads. I really wish we were, but I am sitting here grinning from ear to ear because it's such an inspiration. And that's a word that's bandied around far too much, but it really is inspirational to hear you say that, to have a positive outlook on it, because you've achieved an awful lot of positive things. I remember it like yesterday, watching you race BMX and watching you on the track as well, and thinking, hang on, how's she gone from there to there? And to hear you explain it is brilliant. I think it would be important, though, to finish off, because you touched on mental health issues there. Those are other things as well, like the prejudice we've discussed before, that in previous times have not been talked about enough. I think the whole world seems like it's in a more listening mood now, as it really should be. Yeah. And you sound like you're in a happier place yourself as well.
For me, I've never been in a better place mentally and physically, really. I've never, yeah, I'm just so, content on being in my own skin. And yeah, I'm very much about reflection and, you know, how can I be a better human being? You know, what do I offer to society? What do I take from society, but what do I offer? Even like my friend groups, you know, people I invite into my friend groups are for a reason, but what do I actually give back to them friends and family? And I'm very much about that now, being more mindful of others. But yeah, I think for me, I'm in a fantastic place, and mental health, I guess, even coming out of the lockdown and everything with Floyd and all the kind of negativity that's been weighing people down, I think it is great. Like, that's been one of the biggest reasons why I've spoken and been, you know, openly and active surrounding mental health, because it has hit me hard in the past. And yeah, I just wanted to see, just to be open and vulnerable and allow myself to tell my story on how I did it. And if it helps other people, then brilliant.
I think it does. And look, you know, people may have said this term in the wrong way before, but I think you are a rock star. I think you're an absolute rock star. And I think it's been brilliant to listen to you, Sinead. Thanks so much.
No, thank you, Matt. It's been great.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.